On Friday afternoon in Virginia Beach, a gunman shot and killed 12 people at the city's municipal building. 11 of them were city employees. There have been 148 mass shootings in 2019 where four or more people were shot. It's a conversation we've had with you before, over and over. And your reactions from this weekend lead the show today.
This is Carrie from Pittsburgh. I think, oh no, not again. Then I avoid the news for a period of days until the next disaster or mass shooting occurs to take the headlines away.
This is Barbara from Richmond. I'm no longer interested in details because they seem to be always the same. Someone snapped, guns were readily available, people died. Our thoughts and prayers are with the victims' families, blah, blah, blah.
This is Richard from Haleiwa, Hawaii. I used to get really upset and wonder what's happening to America, but sadly with this most recent shooting, I realized I felt a little desensitized and I just kind of sighed like, oh, another mass shooting.
This is Frankie calling from Olympia, Washington. I usually avoid details as it's all a bit much to take in. I don't really feel like feeding it with my attention helps anything.
This is Mary from Lake Stevens. I think about victims, but I definitely avoid details. No mass shooting or everyday shooting, for that matter, will lead to a change in gun laws. The solution is purely political will.
This is Sydney Elkin from Moultrie, Georgia. I try to find information out about the victims to honor them, but nothing about the perpetrators. They don't deserve to be told.
These shootings have become so commonplace in American life that many of you told us you're becoming desensitized. You also told us that more attention should be given to victims than to the shooter. And to address this, city officials in Virginia Beach chose to identify the suspected shooter only once by name, referring to him after that only as the suspect. The focus, they said, should be on the 12 people killed.
Lakita C. Brown, Tara Welch Gallagher, Mary Louise Gale, Alexander Mikhail Gusev, Catherine A. Nixon, Richard H. Nettleton, Christopher Kelly Rapp, Ryan Keith Cox, Joshua A. Hardy, Michelle Missy Langer, Bobby Williams, Bert Snelling.
Among academics, there's a growing consensus that when media outlets center their reporting on the shooters themselves, that coverage has the potential to lead to copycat violence. And that's just one area where the media's role in how we cover mass shootings takes on an added responsibility. Today, a look at the way we respond to mass shootings in this country and how public officials and the media could do it better. I'm Tanzina Vega. This is The Takeaway. I'm joined now by Nicole Dahman, an associate professor at the University of Oregon School of Journalism and Communication. And Michael Greenberger is also here. He's the founder and director of the University of Maryland Center for Health and Homeland Security. And he leads a team that advises governments and private institutions on how to respond to catastrophic events like mass shootings. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Michael, let's start with you. The Virginia Beach police, as we mentioned at the top, made a point of only referring to the suspect once by their name, and after that, calling him simply the suspect. Why and how effective is that approach?
Well, the why is because as these events continue to be coming at us with a great rapidity, it is pretty clear that it's a best practice that if you focus too much on the perpetrator, that the chances of there being a copycat repetition of the kind of attack will occur. And the numbers on that are pretty extraordinary.
Nicole, I want to bring you in here because many of the callers we heard at the top of the show said that they were desensitized. And I'm wondering if you can help us understand a little bit about, is that desensitization to the act of mass shootings, or is it really, do you think, focused on how the media is covering or not covering these events?
Well, so the challenge from the journalistic perspective is covering these events in a way that gives us new information and isn't giving us the same thing over and over again. And so, yes, absolutely, there is the potential for the audience to become sensitized from this routine coverage. And so the challenge is reporting these stories, again, in such a way to give us new information, to get to the bottom of them, and to lead to solutions.
And what is, Nicole, our responsibility in the media to report the facts versus to prevent copycats?
Right. So the ethical responsibility from a journalistic perspective is to seek truth, which the journalists do, but also to minimize harm. And that's where the challenge comes in from this copycat perspective. So the media absolutely have a responsibility to report on these events, but to do it in an ethical way so that we're not leading to future carnage. And certainly no well-intentioned journalist wants to be able to do that. And so we need to find a new way to be able to report on the ongoing problem of mass shootings.
Michael, I want to bring you in back in here because we know that a lot of how these events begin to unfold is on social media, which means that you and I and everybody else has a role in basically reporting, and I'm putting reporting there in quotes, these stories out. How does that impact the authorities in their decision about how to move forward with public information? Or does it factor into the equation, Michael?
Well, it certainly does factor into the equation, and that is what has led the sensitivity to focusing on the victims and not on the perpetrator. On the other hand, as a person who's responsible for how you prevent and respond to these events, the fact that people are desensitized is somewhat worrying because there are things people can do to prevent maximum harm here. It's interesting that one of the people who survived the attack had been involved in a similar mass shooting in Texas in 2014, and he reported that he learned how to shelter in place and how to avoid being put in harm's way by having gone through that event, having learned about it, having been trained on it. Interestingly enough, the Virginia Beach Police on Saturday, the day after this event, were to hold an event in the municipal building teaching people how to shelter in place when they are in a mass shooting situation. So on the one hand, you don't want to encourage copycats, which is a problem. On the other hand, there are lessons learned here, not only for police and first responders, but for individuals in their own experience here. And again, when you say you're desensitized, I would just tell people this can happen anywhere, anytime, to anybody.
One of the things that I think comes up and has come up in this particular mass shooting is the image that was posted on the front page of the Virginian Pilot, which showed a man who was injured in Friday's shooting but survived. In the photo, the man is covered in blood. And I think it's probably one of the more graphic photos that we've seen that have been related to a mass shooting. Nicole, I'm wondering, New Yorker editor Michael Luo, formerly at the New York Times, wrote that images like that one might actually make consumers less numb. Do you agree with that?
So it is true that we haven't actually seen a lot of the blood and the carnage of mass shootings visually, the way they're reported in this country, are very sanitized. So there has been some discussion of whether or not seeing the actual graphic crime scene photos would sort of move us from complacency to action. One of the challenges from the media perspective here is getting access to these crime scenes, because a lot of them happen, of course, in private facilities where the news media are not given access to capture the photos. So a lot of times what we actually just have are images that are taken with cameras from people who are inside the scene. And so that presents a different challenge in releasing those. But one of the arguments that I've been making, and many of my other colleagues who study this have been making, and it's a point that Michael made, is we need to find a new way to cover this. So he was talking about what we need to learn how to protect ourselves. So it's run, hide, fight. So that's something that the news media could include in every single one of these stories, right? So let's put that information in every single story that we write about. We also need more stories, and there's a lot already doing this, that point to solutions, right? So what are some potential solutions to alleviating the gun violence epidemic in this country? So a story recently talked about safe ways to get rid of your guns or mental health coverage.
One thing that happens also, and I'd like to get your answer, Nicole and Michael, your reaction to this, is that we see there's a lot of, in the initial reaction to a mass shooting, there's a lot of care not to mention the perpetrator's name. But then there are big, in-depth reported profiles that come out about these folks. There's often a devotion to asking for the motive behind some of these mass shootings. Do you, Nicole, think that those are journalistically important questions that we need to be asking? And Michael, do those hurt or help what you are trying to do?
So it absolutely is important to identify the who in any journalistic story, but we still need to do it in a responsible way. And so that includes not including the name in the headline, not including the name and repeating it over and over and over. It's the repetition that becomes the problem. The perpetrator stories, the profile pieces, can be important in getting to some of the details of the how and why. The problem with those are the ones that report it in such a way as to essentially glorify these perpetrators, right? So to use some very sort of flattering language in some ways, or to hide the fact almost. So for example, there was a story recently in a big major news outlet that didn't mention the fact that the person here was a perpetrator of a mass shooting until 9 paragraphs into the story.
Michael, what about you? How does your business or what you do is impacted, if at all, by long profiles like this, by journalism that sort of takes this other approach?
Well, I don't know about long profiles, but that information, I think, is important. I agree completely with the fact that there needs to be sensitivity about how it's reported. But I was going to say that there is a policy development that's been abandoned by the Trump administration, which is as follows. If you trace the motivation for almost every mass shooting in the United States, the perpetrator was known to some significant person, entity, body as being a problematic person. And there is in the academic community, and we personally are working on this, the ability, if a person such as that is identified before a mass shooting as someone who might be problematic, to feed that person into the social service community. The Obama administration was starting to examine methods of doing this in a way that did not look at the racial profile of the person who might be involved. The Trump administration has turned this completely into a Muslim problem, focusing only on Muslims and not on white nationalists. But anyway, for example, in the Washington metropolitan area, a lot of the local governments are getting together to try and do a more sensitive approach about this, to allow people, without focusing on the race of the potential perpetrator, to feed these people into a system where they can be cared for, evaluated, looked at more carefully. And of course, if the person is bound and determined to conduct a terrorist act, well, at that point, probably law enforcement should be involved.
Nicole Dahman is an associate professor at the University of Oregon School of Journalism and Communication, and Michael Greenberger is the founder and director of the University of Maryland Center for Health and Homeland Security. We appreciate you both taking the time.
Thank you.
Thank you.